Hi, this is David Hestrin for naturalnews.com. I'm here with Paul Cech, one of the top leaders in the field of holistic health, not only training world-class athletes to achieve peak performance, but also helping thousands of people overcome obesity and addictions and find themselves on that path of health and happiness. We're speaking today on the topic of restoring the vibrant health of our planet and its people. Paul, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
So, I guess to start out, can you just tell us what you think vibrant health is?
Well, in my philosophy, vibrant health is the ability to live your dreams without unnecessary obstruction due to pain and disease.
Okay, that's so what do you see as the fundamental obstructions that people are dealing with?
Well, the primary obstruction is being lied to perpetually by the medical system, by our educational system, believing in modern science and scientific research, which is almost all funded by people with a financial motive, not a motive of producing health, but selling products, and the absolute abuse and manipulation of people through the media. For example, a few years ago, a research report came out in the journal Dynamic Chiropractic, where they had investigated medical advertising and found that 79% of all medical advertising was bogus and could not be backed up by any scientific claims whatsoever.
Wow.
Yet, the government perpetually allows this to happen. All you've got to do is turn your television on, and you will see drugs being sold to everybody from children to old people, and the side effects of the drugs are usually far worse than the very problem that they're supposedly addressing, and 99% of the time the problems that they're addressing are symptoms of disorders of lifestyle, simple self-management. So what they do is they give you a drug, for example, that'll help you sleep better, instead of just telling you what it means to sleep, when you should go to sleep, how you should create an environment that's conducive to sleep. So we don't tell anybody how to get healthy, we just tell them how to get rid of the symptom, and then what we give them to get rid of the symptom creates many other symptoms, which results in the sales of many other drugs. And today, what a paradox it is that the country that spends the most money on healthcare in the world ranks between 19th and 37th amongst the world's nations for health, and we are approaching last place in many of these categories and have a population that's absolutely riddled with disease in spite of all of our so-called science. So, you know, without the government taking responsibility for filtering and for managing the flow of information to the people, we're really never going to have a fighting chance of people getting healthy, because most people out there have less knowledge about health than they do about nuclear physics. You get an accountant or a lawyer or a truck driver or a mechanic, and they know a lot about what they do. If we need help with our taxes, we go to a tax accountant, and they help fill the knowledge gap because that's what their expertise is. But when people are expected to know how to live and how to eat on their own, yet the world has become so industrialized, so mechanized, and so compartmentalized, it's easy for people to have some knowledge of health, because they're in the business or they're an athlete, to look around and watch people dying all over the place and look at these people and say, why are these idiots eating all this junk food? But then forget the fact that nobody's ever trained them, and most people today come from families that ate the same garbage and lived the same way that they're living, and their very parents were sick people and unhealthy people. Their school teachers were sick and unhealthy people. The average American medical doctor dies 10 years earlier than his average patient.
Wow.
So we're going to sick people to learn how to be healthy. How in the world are we ever going to produce a healthy society without legitimate scientific research nasty in the media, and how can the people ever have any sense of what is safe and secure when our own FDA allows the very people that make these dangerous products to produce their own research validating safety? That is like trusting the devil to be your spiritual teacher as a metaphor.
Okay, so before we get into what your answer is onto how we can restore the Earth to a vibrantly healthy society, I'm really interested in what your vision of what a vibrantly healthy society would look like.
Well, my vision of a vibrant, healthy society would be one in which everybody understands the very basics of what it takes to create a healthy life. Aristotle described the essential elements that create life as earth, water, fire, and air. If you look at that, it's very evident that we cannot survive without the earth. We cannot survive without clean water. We cannot survive without clean air and enough oxygen in the atmosphere to support life as it exists on the planet. And the fire principle manifests in the human being as metabolism, which produces warmth. And only a living body that's warm can think and make effective decisions. Yet when you look at what's going on, we do not have a society that supports those elemental basics. So my idea of a modern healthy society would be one that safeguards the topsoil and respects the earth as the source of our food and of our well-being, as our very home, that respects water as the source of life and takes careful safeguards not to pollute the soil and the water so that it becomes damaging not only for us but for life itself. One that respects the air as essential to life, and one that respects the fact that fire represents energy and the way we move energy. And in order for a healthy society to respect the fire principle, there has to be a balanced relationship in working and playing. Yet current research shows that 98% of the U.S. population is one paycheck from bankruptcy. So in a healthy society, there would be a balance, and there would be less emphasis on buying another BMW or another guest house or working yourself to death to put your children through an Ivy League college, yet while at the same time, they've never been raised by their parents. They've been raised by babysitters and MTV because everybody was so busy trying to create this dream future. And by the time such children get to college, they're usually on psychotropic drugs with depression, anxiety, attention deficit. And essentially, they're suffering from never having a childhood. So a healthy society would honor the children and would not put them in academic situations until their brain hemispheres had formed and they could effectively create and think logically. We would not push children into the left brain until their right brain had developed, which is the normal growth and development sequence for a human being. So a healthy society would honor the children and let them play and teach them how to think and how to create in creative ways that allows the child to play and be free and to be a child, as opposed to sticking them in a classroom where they have to sit still in a desk and pay attention to long extended periods of left brain information streaming, which is completely unnatural to a child. So, very simply put, you could not possibly have a healthy society that did not honor those four basic principles, because those four principles are the very foundation of life itself.
So how do you see the ways that we can restore the Earth to a vibrantly healthy society? I'm especially interested in that, given that you're suggesting that the government is not presently with the intention to restore the Earth to a vibrantly healthy society. So how do you see, like how are we going to successfully do this?
Well, the individual, you know, if you think of the body as a collection of 100 trillion cells, and you think of a disease as a process that degenerates, deteriorates, or disidentifies any cell or system of cells, such as a gland or an organ, such that it no longer functions as part of a community, then each individual who gets a disease is basically put in a position where they have to take responsibility for their own health and well-being, or they themselves are going to die. And to the same degree that any given cell in the body can be the origin of disease, and that person must take responsibility for the collection of cells they call a body, the only way humanity is going to heal is to see itself as a living organism with approximately 6 billion cells called human beings. And each individual human being has to take responsibility for their own health and well-being and not wait around for the government to fix things or big business to fix things. And to get clear that if they don't manage their own health and well-being, which means that they have to pay attention to the earth, to the water, to the air, and to managing their energy, then humanity itself will not change. When people take responsibility for themselves, to the very degree that they create health and vitality in their own life, they become living, breathing examples for their family, for their friends, and for society to emulate. Right now, we have very, very few people on the planet who are actually capable of emulating health and well-being for anybody else to see. It's a mistake to wait for the government to change or for the world to change. We have to change ourselves at the level of the individual. And when enough people get diseased and see that the medical system isn't working and start taking their own health and their own vitality as their own responsibility, then the population will begin to heal one cell at a time, which is exactly how any disease heals in the body as well.
So how do you work with someone who comes to you that I guess until he's come to you has been eating the standard American diet and exercising the average amount? How do you help them get to the path?
Well, the first thing, you know, I basically teach what I call the 1-2-3-4 model, which is a 4-step model that anyone can use to create health and well-being. And I'd like to state right now that I don't believe in the treatment of disease for a simple reason. If you put 50 people in a controlled environment and specifically stress those people enough that disease is a likely byproduct of the stress, All 50 people are likely to get 50 different diseases because we all have different genetic weaknesses, we all have different psychological profiles, we all see the world differently, and therefore our stress perceptions are uniquely individual, and therefore our stress reactions are uniquely individual. So in my 1-2-3-4 model, the 1 stands for the one love. Each person that I work with, the first thing I do with them is I put them through a process which I've outlined and offer to the public on my PPS Success Mastery training program at ppssuccess.com, which is how to find and live your legacy. So the first thing I do is I try to establish motive with each individual. I ask them, what is it that you're willing to get healthy for? What is bigger than you in your life that you're willing to move beyond your own addictions and your own obstructions in order to experience or to offer something more beautiful than your own individual reality? For example, in order to teach children how to be healthy, the parents have to have a dream of being healthy themselves, and then they share that with the children. And if they can't do it for themselves, I say, can you do it for your children? So sometimes people don't have enough sense of self-value and self-worth to get themselves healthy for their own experience, but they're willing to do it for other people. So step number one is establish motive. And to establish motive, I look with each individual to find out something that they love enough to get healthy for to experience, and that can range from an athletic achievement, finishing a marathon, climbing a mountain, building a new business, or it can be something as simple as just having a healthy body so they have freedom from disease and then there's no creative obstruction. Once I've established an individual's motive, not the motive that their spouse wants them to accomplish, not what their family wants to accomplish, or not what they think society wants, but what they truly can connect to, something that is uniquely for them, then we move to step number two. The two stands for the two forces that create life, the male force of yang and the female force of yin. So in step two, I look through their life with them, looking at the seven main psychophysical themes, which are safety and security, rhythm and flow, personal power, self-will, giving, receiving love, communicating, creating, and then developing a spiritual connection to whatever it is that the individual believes is the source of life itself. And wherever they are out of balance, we seek to balance the male and female forces. So, for example, if somebody's a workaholic and they can't feel safe unless they have, a large sum of money in the bank, yet that's requiring them to work so much that they're burning themselves out to the degree that they can't even enjoy their dream when they get there, which so many Americans do. They finally, retire and have $1 million in the bank, but they come to me with cancer and now they're scared to death because they finally have this financial safety and security that they worked for, but they created a disease that's now in the way of them experiencing the freedom that they worked their whole life for. So step number two would be to take somebody like that and work to create balance in their life so they can achieve safety and security, but also arrive having enjoyed the experience and having the health and well-being. Step number three is choices. There's only three choices any of us can make in any relationship with persons, places, or things, and that is the optimal choice. And the optimal choice is always the one that produces the best outcome for all involved. The suboptimal choice is the second possibility, and that's the one that may work best for us but creates disharmony in relationships with persons, places, or things. And it's still a better choice than the third choice, which is indifference. Because at least if you're doing things and it's producing the wrong result, you're gaining experience, which produces wisdom. And when you realize that, for example, taking a bunch of drugs to get rid of headaches doesn't really do anything but get you addicted to drugs and your headaches are still there, then you realize through making the wrong decision and having the wisdom that drugs don't work, that maybe you need to seek help from a natural health practitioner, etc. And then the third choice is just to give up and do nothing about it or to not care. So once we identify their dream and we identify where they're out of balance with regard to homeostasis or what their personal, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual reality can tolerate within the range of too much or too little, then we move into the fourth step, which is representing the four doctors, Dr. Diet, Dr. Quiet, Dr. Movement, and Dr. Happiness. So then what I do with each individual is I take their dream, their goal for achieving, I show them where they're out of balance, I show them which choices they can make in order to live that principle or the principles of health and well-being through the concept of the four doctors. So then I write a program for them that looks at Dr. Quiet. How much rest do you need to achieve health and well-being and live your legacy or your dream? And once we look at how much quiet time, we then evaluate how much time they have and what techniques are restful to them that they're willing to participate in. For example, a lot of people in the West can't meditate, but they need to meditate. So I might seek to find active meditation forms that they can implement into their life or throughout the workday. Then when we look at Dr. Movement, I say, okay, you need to move your body in order to pump it, keep it healthy, and keep it clean. So we look at the relative relationship between working out or spending energy and tearing the body down through movement versus working in, which means to use movement to accumulate more energy than the session or the exercise actually cost. So we look at things such as Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, slow walking, breathing exercises, simple, gentle movement that allows their body to get nourished with movement, pump and clean itself, yet doesn't leave them with a deficit in the flow of energy. So we balance the Dr. Movement principle so that there is a balance between the catabolic or tissue destructive use of self and the anabolic or tissue building use of self. And then we look at Dr. Happiness, which means we establish core values. We get clear on the importance of a healthy diet. We get clear on the importance of rest and how much they need. We get clear on the importance of exercise and space needs and time needs. And we look at how much time they actually can spend in committed relationships so that they don't put themselves on a bunch of committees and have to be in all these meetings all the time and end up burning up all their time that they need to balance and heal themselves by making contributions to things that for reasons of social cultural programming that they think they need to do to participate in a society. And once they have core values, they have set up a living matrix by which they can express themselves. And then Dr. Diet plays out in really working with each individual to identify what is the optimal ratio of animal foods to plant foods, and how much water do they need to drink, and what are optimal sources of food, and what is whole food eating, and we weave that into the overall plan. So by the time I've taken a person through the four steps, they know why they're doing it, they know what their direction is, they know what their North Star is, so to speak. They know where their life is out of balance. They know which choices they need to make. And since everybody's schedule is usually just full, part of the choices that have to be made are deciding which activities and which relationships an individual's participating in that are not moving them towards their legacy, their dream, or towards health. And they have the option to choose to disengage from destructive activities and energy depleting activities into healing and energy accumulating activities. And then they know how to live the principle of the four doctors. And to the degree that any individual truly wants to live their dream and experience health, a program like that is so simple and so obvious that the only thing that gets in the way of accomplishing that is one's fear of being healthy or fear of being free. And paradoxically, people are very afraid to be healthy and afraid to be free because society itself is a collection of people that for the most part are very, very sick and are very, very bound up in the ideas of the things that they think they've got to do for everybody else and for themselves. And so when one in our society becomes truly healthy and free, they find themselves in a paradox because all the people that they once connected to in their various social groups or in the workplace are now no longer people that they can easily socialize with, because if you used to hang out with your buddies and drink beer and eat fast food, now you're no longer in that social group. If you used to be part of a triathlon training club and you were training yourself to death, but you realize that you're exercising twice as much as you should, well, now you've lost some connection with that social group. And so what happens is you quickly find yourself in what I call the desert, which means you're all alone on this journey into health, well-being, and creating love in your life. And everybody's got an excuse as to why you're wasting time, or, you know, oh, you're an exercise addict or a health food freak. And so because many people in our society don't have a very strong sense of self, and they get their sense of self by other people's approval, there's hardly anybody out there that gives approval for being health, because there's very few people that have it, recognize it. And when one person in a social group starts getting healthy, unfortunately, the ego of the other people tends to attack that person instead of joining them. So we've created an environment where it's actually very, very challenging at a mental, emotional level to do the work to get healthy, because it creates such a strong disconnect from the social circles that are all basically steeped in the principles of disease and living a life that does not serve them. So one has to really, truly want to be healthy and be strong enough to make the journey. And if an individual is not at peace enough with themselves to give themselves their own sense of approval and self-gratification, they're unlikely to make the journey into health, because they're not strong enough to be an individual or be independent or trust their own inner sense of judgment and evaluation as to the rightness of what they're doing, and therefore they lean on and need other people's approval. And the kind of approval you get from sick people is sick approval.
So it sounds like people have been programmed for fear and really in all directions. So I'm wondering how do people free themselves to be fearless, and is it so much important to be fearless, or is it more important to have the strong sense of mission or like a higher purpose that you describe?
Well, you know, there's so many varieties of psychological types in humanity that you really have to customize your approach to each individual based on their psychological profile. What instills fear in one is completely different than what instills fear in another. The only unifying force that we all can agree upon is that love is the most powerful healing force and the greatest form of nutrition that there is. It's the primary form of nutrition, which has been documented in numerous studies on infants. And it's very, very evident from the research that an infant raised without love has a very, very high likelihood of becoming a psychopath or a criminal. And science itself cannot identify what love is. It can't be weighed, it can't be measured, and it's almost impossible to study it, yet we all know that love is the most powerful healing force within our psychic realm of understanding. Therefore, the only unifying principle that I know of that is a common language to all cultures is to create love in your life. And in order to create love in your life, you must get clear as to whether or not you want to live your dream or live somebody else's dream. Brian Tracy says in his program on goal setting, if you're not working for your own goals, you can rest assured you're working for your bosses. Yet many people walk around complaining. When I was a soldier in the military, I listened to soldiers whine and bitch every day constantly about how badly they hated the military. Yet at the end of their 3 or 4 year term, 95% of them signed up for another 3 or 4 years. And when I said, I'm getting out of the Army, I'm going to go start a business, and I'll be making general's wages in 3 years, they all said, oh, don't you want to stay? Aren't you worried? Don't you like the regular pay? And I said, look, you're the same idiot that's complaining every minute of every day about how you hated the Army, and you just signed up for more of it. You must like to be tortured. But the point simply is, if a person cannot be honest with themselves and be brave enough to go live their love, then they have basically sentenced themselves to a life of living somebody else's ideas and somebody else's dreams. And that's really the predicament that has led people to live and believe in all this bogus advertising. And, you know, all a person has to do is have enough intelligence to look around, and you will see in minutes that most people that are touting all these health products and all this stuff are just as sick and just as screwed up as anybody else. We've got more world-class athletes dying of heart attacks and diseases than ever in the history of man. And it's a paradox to me that we now have an entire populace of people on the planet that I refer to as fit, sick people. They exercise the hell out of themselves, yet they eat poison while they're doing it, and they just make excuses that they can eat garbage because they exercise.
So how do you work with someone who thinks that they're healthy, or maybe even thinks they're really healthy, but in reality they don't eat organic food, they eat added sugar, the protein shakes and things like that? How do you get them to set their sights on the really holistic health?
Well, it's very easy for me, because anybody that's willing to pay $500 an hour to come get my coaching is already very aware that they have a problem. So, you know, first and foremost, it's a major, major mistake to try to tell people that they need to get healthy if they don't think that they're unhealthy. Because if they don't have an internally driven motive, they're not going to pay attention to you anyhow. And the way the human psyche works is, if it's not in pain, it continues to think that what it's doing is right. But they don't realize that in the five stages of disease, pain only occurs in the fourth stage. So by the time you're in pain, you're so close to having a disease, the doors are almost closed on you. So, you know, how I do it is, when the people come to me with their laundry list of vitamins and supplements and all the things that they're doing, which they usually spend hours trying to defend, while I'm trying to teach them what they should be doing, I simply remind them that, look, you're sitting in my office asking for my help. And it's a bit of a paradox, and many times, as a 48-year-old man, I can outlift, outrun, and outthink professional athletes. And I'm old enough to be some of their fathers. My son will be 30 years old in September. So I have to remind them that they've came to somebody that has what they want, and it's a waste of time to try to defend what got you sick when you got a teacher sitting right in front of you that's healthy and fit. So the answer to your question is simply that you cannot tell people until they're ready to hear. And they have to come to the conclusion on their own through life experience that what they're doing is not working. And you can never really learn unless you're willing to change. And if you're not willing to change, you cannot learn, because the process of learning by definition means changing. So, to quote Brad Sugar, the formula for change is as follows. When the desire for change is greater than the resistance to change, change happens. So as a holistic health practitioner, I'm only a useful tool to people that have a desire to change, which usually comes through the experience that what they're doing isn't working. If I was to put every single thing that I have produced on health on the market for free, very few people would do anything about it. And I've done tests on this and have proven it over and over again, that you cannot give the best information away to people, because they will not participate in it until they are motivated by pain. So paradoxically, pain becomes a very, very important and necessary teacher for people. It's almost impossible to get rid of pain, because the organism itself at the cellular level really only has two basic drives: move away from pain and move towards pleasure. And until somebody's clear that they're not having the experience, not living the life or loving what they want to love and do, then they don't realize they're not in pleasure. And until they have pain, they don't know which direction to move. So this goes back again to the fact that until we have enough people that are brave enough to live their own life and take responsibility for their own health and freedom, and those people begin to guide their children such that the children become examples for all the other children to see, we are basically in checkmate. And it really has been this way since about the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. If you look at studies on feeding, you can see that all the way back at the First World War, they had approximately a 48% rejection rate of incoming recruits due to malnutrition. And by the Second World War, it rose up to between 48 and 52%. And that triggered an investigation by both the British government and the United States government into why it was that the youngest, fittest, healthiest men in England and United States were showing up for duty in a state of disease, and 90% of them were deemed by military medical doctors to be unrehabilitatable. They were too far gone. And even when the government spent huge amounts of money to investigate this, and both governments identified that food processing was actually the source of the disease, when the United States government moved to pass laws to require food manufacturers to fortify foods with vitamins and nutrients that were lost in the food manufacturing process, the American Medical Association stepped in after the Second World War and threatened to sue the United States government for practicing medicine without a license because they were implying that food in some way caused disease. And they ultimately settled out of court, and the result was that the United States government was limited by the American Medical Association such that they could only demand fortification of bread and milk, which are the only two products today that legally have to be fortified by government law. So we have a medical system that is totally invested in keeping the population sick and uneducated so they can sell billions and billions and billions of dollars with useless drugs, most of which are far inferior to the natural source products that the drug companies make them from. So there's where we're at.
So is it really just like ignorance and greed at the highest levels?
You're intelligent, you tell me.
Well, I thought that there was some kind of just like consciousness that just there's some people that just treat others like cattle. But the thing that you brought up of the American Medical Association suing the government kind of makes it seem like it's just I don't want to curse, but a cluster beep.
There's no cluster at all. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a cluster that the American Medical Association is the largest tax-paying industry in the United States, which means it's a major, major contributor to buying fighter jets and nuclear weapons? If too many guys like me were around, if we rehabilitated, if I could wave a magic wand and have everyone in the United States living the four doctors' principle that I just outlined, the American Medical Association would go bankrupt in a month, and then we would not be able to afford to run a very, very dangerous, very threatening defense industry that consumes $1 trillion a year of U.S. taxpayers' income. Yet recently, a panel of scientists made a proposal to the UN suggesting that for $635 billion over 6 to 7 years, they can rehabilitate the topsoil, feed all the starving people in the world, clean the air and clean the water, and very few countries signed the petition, and the United States government, George Bush, said we did not have the funding to do it. Yet we're defending, at a cost of $1 trillion a year, lines on a piece of paper. The only difference between British Columbia and Washington State is a line drawn on a map. The only difference between San Diego and Mexico is a line drawn on a map. We are one people. We all depend on the same water. We all depend on the same planet. We all depend on the same food. We all depend on the same air. The air that I poison in San Diego makes it to Africa in a day or two through the jet stream. And yet we're running around supporting a very, very large, very dangerous, highly profitable defense industry and many other such industries while we're dying of diseases to do it. So the point that I'm making to you is this is organized crime. This is not a cluster beat, as you said. Mm-hmm. This is organized crime at the highest level. And this has been going on literally for thousands of years. The Vatican had mastered mind control by the 8th century. All you've got to do is study the history of the Vatican and the Crusades, and you will see that government and religion have never been separated. They've just done a better job of hiding it. And the control of people has been going on by the elite for thousands of years. J. Paul Getty himself said, far better is it to get 1% from 100 men than 100% from one man, which is a very clear and definite statement that says if you can extract a little bit from a lot of people perpetually, you can become not only very, very rich, but your richness is very stable because like a mosquito sucking your blood, you don't notice if you get a mosquito sucking your blood now and then, but if 500 of them land on you at the same time, you get the disease. Well, the rich people's philosophy of sucking blood slowly and consistently has spread with such wildfire that now we are literally being sucked from so many directions in little drips and drabs that we're running out of life force. The whole planet is running out of life force. And I personally see that the potential impending financial crash will be the most necessary healing force that's come to this planet in a long time. The medical system and the financial system must collapse in order for us to get back to basics and become a unified world family again. And if it comes by way of another world war or by way of natural disaster, either way, it is a necessary healing force that must come to the planet because we cannot continue to poison and strip mine the planet with no respect for the planet or for life itself.
So earlier you spoke of the individual not being able to rely on the government for any of these things. So do you see a way for an individual to live a lifestyle that's completely in line with taking care of the planet and taking care of their health?
Absolutely. I do it every day. I teach all Czech practitioners to do it. I got about 10,000 students around the world doing it. I got 70,000 copies of my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy in print, which, by the way, was turned down by some 12 major publishers. They told me that if they published that book, it meant that all their other authors were wrong, and they could not risk doing that for damaging their relationships with their existing authors. But they all also told me that they agreed with everything I had in the book. So this is what happens when you start having politically motivated relationships and you're afraid to tell the truth for fear of losing relationships with people that are publishing an inferior truth. The answer is quite simply yes. I get letters every day from all over the world from people who have completely gotten rid of their drugs and their diseases by doing nothing but following my simple book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, which shows each person how to customize their diet and lifestyle and exercise program for their individual needs based on their individual stress levels. Anybody can do this if they want to. And I tell people right now is probably the most amazing time to be alive because we have the greatest entertainment we've ever had. We've got the best technology we've ever had. And we still have access to organic foods, and there's so much that one can do under the heading of love. You can still climb mountains, you can still paddle kayaks in the ocean, on rivers. If we take advantage of all the science and technology, but point it in the direction of creating health and well-being and community building, instead of investing in more bombs and missiles and border patrols and police systems and all this shit that's not helping anybody. I'll give you a simple example. I've got a library full of studies run in prisons showing that when they improve the quality of the food, violence goes down, cognition improves, behavior improves. When they change the colors of the walls in the prisons to more gentle colors, all these things change for the better. I've got study after study. Yet in every single case that I know of, once the study's over, they return everything back to normal. Why? Because if the prisoners aren't violent, then they don't need a security industry with hundreds of thousands of employees making billions of dollars a year to manage the criminals. So they keep the criminals sick and dysfunctional so they can make tons and tons of money off of them, and now they've privatized prisons so that people can actually go in the business of setting up their own prison and make tons of money off of it. So, if we were at all interested. interested in health and social reform, we would have fixed these problems a long time ago.
But, well, I guess I have two questions. I mean, one is, where do you see, really changing the way economics works and people's connection to abundance in this? Actually, yeah, that's the whole question.
Well, first and foremost, if you, and I must commend President Obama, he did an excellent job in an address I saw, where he described clearly that the United States has gotten itself bankrupt primarily due to what is called predatory lending. You run television commercials trying to sell everybody everything on credit, so they'll spend money they don't have, and they buy a ton of garbage that they can't use, don't use, won't use, and don't need. Research, for example, shows that 98% of all products bought on infomercials are never used after the first 2 weeks, and a huge percentage of them are never even open. So we've created a tremendous problem in our economy with predatory selling and predatory lending, once again, because the government is not policing how people are being manipulated through advanced technology. When you get a company like Coca-Cola with a marketing budget of over $300 million a year, and other corporations, they hire the best psychologists, they hire the best marketing firms, they hire the best film production firms. And when you consider that the average high school student has watched more hours in television commercials by the time they graduate than they actually spent in school, how in the world do school teachers have a chance at competing against the people that are generating Walt Disney, MTV, and hiring these same people to program the minds of children when they're completely defenseless to go out and buy stuff and to try to live a fake dream and think that if they eat this food or wear that clothes, that they're going to be like Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or Shaquille O'Neal or look like Madonna or all this crap? This is just absolute manipulation of the public, and it has led to people trying to buy freedom and trying to buy success and trying to buy looks. The amount of money that's spent every year on plastic surgery, which if people would just take the time to exercise and eat correctly would be clearly a waste of money, is mind-blowing, because people's minds are being preyed upon by organizations that know how to tap into the human psyche and trigger a buying impulse. And if you do some research on the internet, you'll find something equally shocking. They've now perfected electronic weapons that can point at a crowd and create an impulse or an urge to move in any given direction. They can create fear in people. And this kind of technology has been going on for years. I'm sure you know that they had to go after large corporations for using subliminal messages in movies and marketing ads. But that stuff has not gone away at all. They've just done a better job of hiding it. So essentially, the truth of the matter is, and I go right back to where I started, until the individual takes responsibility for policing their own mind and protecting the sanctum of their inner world, of their very temple, where their consciousness, where their very soul worships life, until one is aware enough to protect that and protect their children, we are going to get worse before we get better. But right now is a beautiful time to take advantage of the fact that we can still get good food and we can still play and have fun, and we're not in a world war and the economy hasn't collapsed. My dream and my goal with my work is to give everyone that wants the tools for achieving health and well-being an opportunity to have them. And I've synthesized a lifetime, 25 years of very, very busy work as a holistic health practitioner, into some very simple books and videos that have the key foundational principles that anybody can use to create health and well-being in their life. And when a person's physical body is healthy, then their brain is healthy and they can think well. But to the degree that your body's dirty and your blood's dirty, your brain is also sick and dirty. And you cannot expect sick, tired, dirty people to come up with the energy and the creative thinking to solve the problems of the world today. And Einstein said it best, you cannot solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. And sick people do not have the energy or the intelligence to create solutions to very complex problems. And that's exactly why the government keeps funding all this garbage. If you look, for example, at Candace Pert's book, Molecules of Emotion, a world-famous biochemist and drug formulator makes it very, very clear that sugar is a class one drug. Processed white table sugar is a class one drug, equally as addictive as heroin, morphine, and other class one drugs, and should never, ever have been legalized. And the government's known that since the 1800s, yet because of the trillions of dollars made indirectly and directly off the sales of that very, very dangerous and damaging drug, they are able to continue to play their little games, and all of this is controlled by a very few rich people at the top of the pyramid of financial wealth. 98% of the world's wealth is owned by 2% of the population, and the dividing line of that 2% is a yearly income of $100,000 or more. So literally, the statistics show that only 2% of the world population has an annual income of $100,000 a year or more, and those are the people that are making the decisions that drive the other 98% either towards or away from health, and that's just how it is.
But as it stands, people do have the choice with how they spend their money. So can you talk about maybe what... how a person could prioritize if they do have money? Like, let's say they can already pay for all the organic food. Like, what do you think people should be doing with their surplus? There are a lot of people that buy a condo or that invest in some stocks or something. Do you see some investment options that can actually really work to restore the earth to a vibrant health?
Sure. There, you know, voting is absolutely a joke. The only way you can really vote is with your money. You can't stop chemical companies from ruining the earth if you keep buying the chemicals. You can't stop garbage food manufacturers from buying junk food if you keep buying it, yet 90% of all the money spent on food in the United States of America is spent on fast food. Only 6% of the food eaten in the world is organically grown. Everybody has the opportunity to vote with their dollar, and the only way people are going to start voting is if they get clear on what it is that they want to do with their life, what it is that makes them feel good. If you want to be a musician and you hate being a lawyer, then quit your job and go out there and put your time and energy towards living the way you want to live. And when somebody's truly in love, they already are intelligent enough to know that if you eat and live in a way that stops you from living your love, climbing your mountains, paddling your kayak, playing with your kids, then you're spending money in the direction of disease, not health. Most people don't realize that every single president-elect has been a member of the Freemasons. If we have a free vote, a true free country, how is it that every single president of the United States came from one small group, one secret society called the Freemasons, which is part of the Illuminati, the people that control the money and the flow of the money in the world? People have to become intelligent enough to start voting for themselves first. And the way you vote for yourself is you vote for food that supports life. You vote for shelter that supports life. You vote for companies that have made a significant effort to minimize harm to the environment, and you support them. If it means you've got to spend more money for a new carpet in your house to support a corporation that has put checks and balances in place to protect the environment, my God, that is a worthy investment. You paint your house with organic paint, not chemicals. You go out of your way to create an environment outside of you that nourishes health on the inside of you. When we eat, when we drink, and when we breathe, we bring the outer world into the inner world. And if the outer world that we bring in is destructive to the world that we live in inside of our bodies, it's a no-brainer to realize that we must make changes outside of us to keep health inside of us. We can't be healthy on the inside if everything outside of us does not support life or is essentially disease-supporting. So it's really up to the individual to become conscious of what they're willing to live for and create health for, and to get clear that they do have a choice to experience health and well-being and freedom from disease, and that they don't have to live the way society is living. And one of the most effective ways to begin that process is to throw your television out the window.
So do you think there's a way to inspire the elites to, I guess, to get on the path of healing the earth and letting the whole earth be a happy, healthy place? Is there a way to connect with those people? Because I don't see any, it seems that they have a monopoly on force and surveillance. So how can we actually inspire them to want to make this place a paradise?
Well, there's two answers to that. One, many of my clients are millionaires and billionaires, and they become inspired when they come to me with diseases and see what we have to do to get healthy after they've tried all the medical approaches and it hasn't worked. And many of them then hire check practitioners to go into their companies and give lectures and set up, health and fitness programs for the employees. So the process is happening all over the world. They are learning slowly. The other thing that's fast approaching is that the elite that have so carefully farmed humanity and depleted the resources of the planet for profit are essentially killing their market off. So imagine if you were a drug dealer, but you were dealing a drug that killed all your customers. Well, you'd quickly not have a market. So it's stupid. So what's happened is the drug companies and the medical corporations and the defense corporations have essentially created an environment now where people are literally dying, the economy's crashing, and they can't get any more money out of people. So they've really brought themselves to a point now where in the next 30 years, they're going to have to start producing programs and going for healthier options in order to keep their market alive, or they themselves will cease to exist.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say to to anyone who's reading this or listening?
I would just like to say that your life is in your own hands. You have every opportunity to develop a personal, professional, and spiritual philosophy that works for you. Do not believe that God is judging you or that you're going to burn in hell or any of that. God is unconditional love, and by definition, something that's unconditional cannot judge. What people call God is simply life force, and it's willing to experience everything and anything, and all you got to do is turn on your television or open the history books, and that's obvious. When people stop playing silly religious games of themselves and get clear that the highest truth there is consciousness itself, and consciousness does not judge or attach itself to any given outcome, then we must take responsibility for choosing what we call God is going to get to experience through us as life, because we are the living expression of the divine principle. And to the degree that you want to experience pain, unconditional love will experience that with you. To the degree that you want to experience connection and creation, unconditional love will experience that with you. What we call God has no capacity to say no. This is why it says in the Bible, ask and ye shall receive. That's exactly what it means. When somebody truly understands what spirituality is and what creates life, then they also understand at one and the same time that they have a choice to create the life they want to live, and life is for living. You're going to die anyhow, so why try doing that now and then regretting it? I don't know anybody on their deathbed who said, I wish I would have worked harder, or I wish I would have spent more time at work, but I've certainly met a lot of people that had a lot of tears in their eyes because they wasted all their time chasing more houses, more cars, and more stuff, and never got to make love enough, didn't get to know their children, didn't get to see many of the beautiful places in the world, and now they're scared to death because they're dying and haven't yet lived. My offering to all human beings is to stop playing silly games and begin immediately to live so that when you die, you can die with a smile on your face and have a deep, restful, peaceful sleep.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.